Hey, it's Jake, and welcome to the Setlist Podcast. This week on the show, we have Sav Beist, Katie Larson, and Michael Dawes of the band The Accidentals. NPR said that these guys are among the most emotionally compelling songwriters of our time, which is very high praise and very well deserved. They've shared stages with people like Andrew Bird, Brandi Carlile, and The Decemberists. They're complete bros, and their charisma is undeniable. So, if you didn't love them already, I'm sure you will fall in love with them by the end of this podcast. I know I did. So, without any further ado, this is The Accidentals. Well, thanks again for doing this. I'm a big fan, and I did want to say, like, this album was so well done and so powerful, and I really like this kind of more melancholy take on your music, if that's a fair assessment.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, I've listened to your music for a while. I've seen it, or heard it rather, pop up throughout some of the shows and movies that I've watched over the years, and it's really cool hearing how your sound has changed over time until we get to this point in Time Out, where it's really taken a softer and a little bit more, what's the word? Maybe like intrinsic kind of feel.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody had to pivot this year, obviously. I mean, there were tons of musicians who, you know, it was like us where we tour full time. That's our main source of revenue. And then boom, you've lost all of that. You've lost all your income for the year. So, you know, the original plan was to record the rest of our album Vessel and put it out and tour it through the summertime. But we kind of had to table that entire project. And what ended up happening was this very serendipitous kind of adjustment into live streaming and kind of working from home. We originally moved to Nashville to do co-writing and session work. And those things quickly translated to kind of an online format. And, you know, working in live streaming connected us to writers like Kim Ritchie and Dart Williams and Tom Paxton. So these co-writes just started really organically developing. And since we'd had to table Vessel for later on in the year, like October, we were like, well, we might as well record these songs that we've been writing over Zoom with these people and try to chronicle a little bit of, you know, the grieving process and the healing process that came with this time. So all the songs are really timely, and if they feel like melancholy or, you know, different, softer and more mellow, it's because we're kind of really trying to feel every emotion that came with the past year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you do a really good job of balancing the kind of impending sense of doom that everybody's yeah. been feeling, but also there are a lot of moments of optimism. Like your song Might As Well Be Gold is like a great example. I remember listening to it for the first time and thinking about all of these plans, you know, that we had going into 2020 and all these big ideas and things that were definitely going to happen, and none of which happened. But finding a way to be optimistic about it, and Might As Well Be Gold is a great example with all the, you know, shattered glass and things like that. The symbolism there is pretty great.
Yeah, I think we had to make that like a conscious choice in every co-writing session to be like, all right, we've gone to a dark place. How do we get ourselves out of this? How do we not leave people, you know, how do we give people a little bit of hope? Because we need hope too. And I feel like that was a balance for every song on the Time Out EP. Almost, I feel like the last song in the EP that we wrote with Mary Gaucher and Jamie Harris, it was like right before the holidays. So it was like right at the end of 2020. And for me, like that was like I was at like one of my like lowest points, like one of the darkest points. And Mary was like, hey, how about this? All shall be well. And I was like, you know what? I kind of need that sort of optimism at this point.
Everybody
so.
Did.
Yeah.
It's so like the hopeful anthem for 2021.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, we had John Smith on pretty recently, and he was talking about his process during this crazy time where, you know, he had been touring for so long now, and then you have a year now where all of a sudden no touring, and adjusting to life like that is just jarring. And I imagine that was pretty similar for you guys as well.
Yeah, we typically tour like 250 shows a year tops, but around 200 every year on average. And to go from doing 8 years of that consistently to not going anywhere at all was a massive adjustment. But, you know, like I said, we're pretty lucky to have tried to transition as quickly as possible. And we had a head start thanks to our Patreon. We've been doing kind of live streams over YouTube from hotel rooms, like doing little sneak peeks of what was going on. Because Patreon's like a behind the scenes subscription program where people can kind of join the process and, you know, get a glimpse of tour blogs and do like, we do like a monthly book club and like,
oh, nice.
You know, stuff like that. So it's, I can't it's believe really
I'm
cool.
not a part of that yet.
Oh my gosh, you have our full invitation.
I'm in.
We're going to do like a D&D session next with the patrons. It's going to be really great.
Oh,
so
nice.
You should definitely join in. But, all right.
Yeah, don't forget the monthly the trivia night.
Oh, the trivia night is so good. Michael dresses in like a sports jacket and has like a disco Zoom background.
Oh,
I promise I'll make the next one a little bit less difficult.
Oh my gosh, that one was brutal.
I'm like the worst at trivia. I think I got like... like 10 points total after like an hour and a half of playing. But Michael did such a good. Michael's like you're meant to be a trivia podcast host. I feel
it's
like
true.
Michael, I'm seeing a future for us, man. I think together we could team up, trivia, book clubs, D&D, all that kind of stuff in a podcast. You and me.
Oh yeah, the variety
Wait,
hour.
Why just him? What happened to us? What are we, chopped liver?
I'll be knitting alone in my house.
Uh-oh.
Oh, Sav will be, I don't know.
We lost Kate. What'd you say, Kate?
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I just said I'll be alone in my room knitting. Sav will be out in the wild studying wolves or something.
Yeah.
Right. I think we're getting dangerous to a topic we're trying not to encroach on. So, but, you know, of course, I'd love to do something in the future with all three of you, but already we've established that there are some weak links when it comes to the trivia game here. Don't point the finger at me.
I got like second place.
Sav wins every time. We have to disqualify her sometimes.
Here's the problem. I don't win at like the actual questions. I win at the bonus questions where Michael's like, list as many people who are on this record label as possible and you get a point for every one of them. And I'm like 7 points out of five by the end of that.
I got all the Spice Girls right on the first round.
Yeah.
And I got the food questions right.
Oh,
I know. I got to do some more tailored categories on the next one.
We had a head start for and we had a steady source of income headed into 2020. And so we were really lucky to be able to, you know, kind of turn heel and switch to something that was still equally requiring like a lot of time. But, you know, also it helped gain like a very personal, intimate relationship with our fans who were also struggling during this time. I think people got really lonely and were missing kind of the live music scene. And what's crazy about Patreon is it ties people from like all over the world who are all gathered for the same purpose and passion. And they're all like friends now, which is super cool.
Yeah, well, like you were saying, Sav, I mean, you did have a head start and you had this community there and obviously this drive. Like, you all really converted the energy that you put on the road to live performances into your online performances. It seems like if there was a cause, you guys were contributing through online performances. I know you did something for Sweet Relief. And many others. So it was a really cool. It was really cool seeing how much you guys gave back of your time and effort.
You know, what goes around comes around, and a lot of those programs, I think everybody had a difficult time this year. It's something that was actually a nice side effect of this pandemic was that for a while there, everybody was kind of united for one mission, and we all understood that we were in different spots, and some people needed more help than others. And so it was nice to see people band together. I know we were not the only band out there doing initiatives and setting up programs for people. Like, there's a festival happening in a couple of days called Spread the Music Festival, which helps keep the lights on for a lot of Michigan music performers. So, yeah, we're lucky to be a part of that scene.
Is there any causes that come to mind that you felt particularly close to that, like, we could use this as a good time to shine a little light on? I know you mentioned one that affects musicians in Michigan.
That's a really good question. We could talk a little bit. We have a nonprofit that we launched. We're still kind of in the process of getting the word out and getting the website up, but youth music and youth music education is really important to us. And so we started a nonprofit called Play It Forward Again and Again to help get young musicians access to instruments and also like pair them up with mentorship and local lessons in their community. So that was kind of another project that we've had on the back burner for years. I mean, because we got our start in our public school orchestra program. So it's been a long time passion, and having like a year off of the road, we finally got a chance to like put together a board and get the paperwork processed. So that was a good thing that we managed to do in 2020.
Oh, it's so cool. I love that. Play it forward.
Yeah.
Again and again.
LLC.
No, it's really cool. I mean, I know just anecdotally, I've got a very good friend here locally that is the orchestra teacher. And it was so cool seeing the program that he was able to build and how much it was affecting the kids. And then with COVID, so much progress has been lost, you know, where kids aren't in school and all those kinds of things. So I know before it needed a lot of help, and especially now, anything we can be doing to get instruments in hands and be able to influence the youth is important.
Not totally. I think we've had to like really rethink music, and it's still such a conversation about like what the future of the music industry is going to look like. I mean, it's been shifting already a lot since we formed the band, like in high school, which is, I guess, 10 years ago. But it's going to change a lot in the next few years, I feel like. And I don't want to see a lot of young musicians get discouraged by this kind of big absence of live music. So I think it's important to really encourage young musicians to just make music regardless of the audience. Like, it can be so helpful. Like, all these co-writes we've been doing really got us through 2020. I mean, it's just really helpful to kind of make those connections through writing and kind of process what's going on in your head.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any challenges, you know, more so when you're doing everything remotely like that? You guys had lots of collaboration, as you just mentioned, on this album. So what were some of the kind of peaks and valleys of having to do it all virtually?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing too, is that like co-writing is such an intimate thing most of the time, right? Like, you're basically getting in the same room. It's good to grab a cup of coffee ahead of time, especially if you've never written together, and like get to know the chemistry of this person. And, you know, typically we'll go to somebody's house and like just hang out in the basement, play a couple of like riffs that we've come up with. All of that, you know, pre-production is gone, I guess. Like, you can kind of fake it in some ways. You can grab a virtual coffee and stuff, but some of the intimacy is really lacking, in a similar way that, you know, some of our previous co-writes were. And yet, you know, people like Kim Ritchie and people like Dar Williams, who have so much personality and just kind of, I don't know, real talent, like raw talent, we were able to kind of overcome some of that. Like, we'd never even written together before with Kim Ritchie or Dar, and we've only written with them online. So it was an interesting hurdle to kind of feel out the dynamic on the spot, but also, you know, be pitching like your ideas before they're really fleshed out. And like, you know, everybody's in an equally vulnerable position. That's how co-writing works, but it's even more exacerbated by, you know, not being able to spend some time in the same room as somebody. So that was one small hurdle that came with going online. The other one was that live streaming itself. I mean, I wrote like a 40-page manual on how to live stream with OBS. And the fact that it's 40 pages long, it's like, you know, obviously I was talking about, you know, live streaming to a lot of different social media platforms, but even still, the process is really complicated. You know, especially if you've never had a whole lot of experience doing it before, it's such a huge transition. And I can't tell you like how many consultations, how many musicians I've talked to who are just trying to get the hang of it and trying to do it in the simplest way possible. And ultimately what you're doing is you're trying to take your sound, translate it into your computer and still make it sound good through thousands of other computers. You know, it's a hurdle, but you know, I'm really proud of the music community for trying to tackle it. And I'm proud of, you know, the community for supporting it. So, you know, everybody's had to make adjustments this year. We've done the best we can, and it gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah, I was speaking with Matt Beiser right at the beginning of all this stuff, and Matt Beiser co-founded the Luck Reunion.
Oh, yeah.
And listening to him talk about pivoting from this incredible music festival in person to what they to doing everything online and like a snap decision, like, oh my gosh, there's a pandemic and we still have to do something. The technical side of the live streaming that he was talking about, with so many different musicians in so many different places going to so many different computers, honestly still gives me anxiety thinking about it.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine the complexity it adds to something that's already pretty complex in terms of making music and connecting with the people who want to hear it.
Yeah, I will say that like everybody took away a skill set this year. Like some people learned how to make sourdough bread, other people became audio engineers. Like, everybody took away something. So
definitely. So if we backtrack a little bit, you were mentioning public schools' influence on how this band came to be. Would you mind telling us a little bit about that?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so Sav and I started the band when we were like 15 and 16. And we really got our musical start through... I mean, through kind of our families and the music scene, but also in fifth grade, everyone had to choose between joining the choir, band, or orchestra right. program in our elementary school. And I know we were pretty lucky to even have an orchestra program up in Traverse City, Michigan, where we're from. And I feel like a band gets kind of a reputation for being geeky, and choir kids can... either be kind of geeky or, I don't know, really cool in the case of our school. But orchestra was like a magnet for all of the really shy kids. and we both, Sav picked up violin and I picked up cello. And I feel like I really felt at home in the music programs growing up. And we eventually met. I mean, Sav was a year older than me, and like I said, we were both really shy, so we didn't talk to each other for many years. And then we like joined a quartet. We still didn't talk to each other. We joined our school's alternative styles for strings club, which was like a group of kids who met after school, and we played sheet music of like Led Zeppelin and MGMT. Oh, cool. And stuff that our orchestra teacher had bought because she was just that cool. And we still didn't talk to each other. And then Sav and I both volunteered when our conductor asked for people to play for like a music boosters event. So Sav and I both joined and went to her house to rehearse, and immediately got distracted from like what we were playing, and ended up singing the White Stripes and jamming on like guitar and ukulele and stuff. So, yeah, like our orchestra program was really, really supportive. I mean, we had a good conductor who brought in a duo called the Moxie Strings to do a workshop, and two women who improvise on a violin and electric cello, and just there's plenty of inspiration and lots of support.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. I mean, those are kind of the kind of those moments made possible by some of these like extracurricular things that I feel like so many people would benefit from having and preserving. Michael, when did you come into the picture?
So I came in I joined the band in 2014. But I met Sav and Katie at a festival in 2013 and then was like a huge fan of the band before I joined. So like the year between when I met him and when I joined, I was like listening to the records like every day, loved the music, like knew it by heart. And then they asked me to come up and play with them for about a month in the summer of 2014. And that was kind of my test run. And it was awesome. It was such a blast. Like we played some amazing shows in that month. And then at the end of the month, they were like, "Hey, we're thinking about doing this full time. Would you want to, you know, drop out of school and come on the road for a bit?" And you know, it was like, "Yeah, absolutely." And the rest is kind of history from there. But yeah, just an awesome time, getting to know them over the course of that year. And then finally being able to play with them was really cool.
So what do you attribute to being able to evolve so well together? You've been playing for a long time, and I know, especially when you're young like that, you know, you're talking about this partially forming in high school, when you're young like that, it's easy to grow up and kind of grow in separate ways, or to say one person stays stagnant and the other person wants to try something different. Maybe stagnant is not the right way to say that, but mm-hmm. like one person wants to stay in this lane, the other person wants to experiment with new things. Yeah. And it seems like you've done that very well. Album to album, there's a different sound, or it sounds like it could be an entirely different band. And it's just really cool. And how are you able to maneuver that and execute that so well?
I think it comes down, I mean, this sounds like a very cheesy answer, but I promise it's not like a pat answer. It's like what it comes down to is like mutual respect, and that sounds like easy, you know, but it's not. I think it's really hard to like let your own ego down every once in a while and like fully just allow things to be tried out. At least that's one of my big things, you know, like I have a hard time. I have a hard time taking things slow. I like to push through all like at a really efficient pace all the time, you know, and sometimes as a result, you bulldoze opportunities down before you can even try them out. So that's something that, you know, I've tried to kind of change about my personality over time. And it's funny because in some ways, like Katie and I have like traded places over time. Like our personalities, like we've just kind of have always had this respect for each other and this love for each other to the point where, you know, we are willing to accept each other for each other's flaws and are also here for when that other person is ready to grow. And I think we always leave the door open for that too. Like nobody ever is going to stay entirely stagnant their whole life. You know, they're always going to want to change. It's just sometimes that rate of change takes longer. And it's been 10 years for this band, almost 10 years. So there's a lot of change. I mean, we were 15 when we started and 25 now. So, you know,
yeah.
a lot can happen, but
right, the Beatles broke up in that amount of time.
But yeah, it does come down to mutual respect and, you know, making sure that you understand how somebody is feeling and accommodating and making that space for them. Like when Michael joined the band, it changed the dynamic entirely. Now we have, you know, kind of a spinal cord to the music, and both of us can kind of feel free to try things out and experiment, but we're still, all three of us are like musically equally relying on each other to accommodate a part of this musical sandwich, right? And too much mustard or like not enough lettuce is not going to make a good sandwich. So even if you like the mustard and you like the lettuce, like, you know, everybody's got to do their part and cut down one or two ingredients to make a good sandwich. So that's, yeah, and like, that's it.
And like when that we're in the studio and working on stuff, and you know, sometimes it'll come down to like a really, really specific detail that we'll get stuck on or something. But we've all like come to the realization that we're only like talking about it in that way because we all mutually care so much about the music and we just want it to be the best that it can be. And so like having that understanding with everybody, like we're all working towards the same goal, and you know, to keep everything moving forward in that way, I think is also, you know, a part that plays into that whole mutual respect thing.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, cliches are cliches for a reason. You know, the mutually respect, mutual respect on a creative endeavor is kind of the pinnacle for working together. I mean, I know there have been so many projects where I've been stubborn on like one detail and fights come up because you lose track of like the fact that we're both trying to make this thing great, and I think it's going to be great this way and you think it's going to be great that way, and maybe we butt heads on this one thing, but keeping the big picture in mind, another cliche way to put it, you know, allows you to keep that mutual respect in place.
I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. Like, we've been there, too. It's been like, you know, sometimes Michael and I are like, it's this harmony. It's like, no, it's this harmony.
No.
And like, I'll, like, come back and I was, like, knock on his door and be like, Michael, can we talk about this? And then we talk about it for, like, 20 minutes. It's like, I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean. Like, I know we're just trying to hit the same goal. But, like, ultimately, a good way to fix that, too, is just to try the dang thing. Like, try it and then wait 24 hours. And then try it another way and then wait 24 hours and then make a decision. And not everybody has the luxury of time. We didn't for years, but that's one thing that we got this year. So we really tried to utilize it to the best of our ability and, you know, make the music good. And we also learned a lot about each other during that time, because I don't know if we've touched on this, but we recorded that Time Out EP ourselves entirely. So we set up the studio in my attic and in Kate's basement. We had two like little spaces, and we built the studio out of like blankets tacked to the ceiling and like CD boxes that were stacked up to make partitions full of like unsold CDs. And like, we like built the studio, we engineered it, we tracked everything, we comped it. We, you know, we did it all. So that was also a huge strenuous thing that none of us went into quarantine expecting to do. And it was something we all walked away with different skill sets on, but we also, you know, we learned a lot about each other and what we like and what we don't like and where we're all willing to agree on the middle. And, you know, the mutual respect really did develop as a result of that.
Wow. Well, maybe I'm just a horrible note taker, but I had no idea that you guys had done it yourselves like that. And I hope that's a compliment to the way that it sounds. It's indistinguishable in quality compared to all the other work that you've done.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. It was like, yeah, it was a big process. Like Saf mentioned, when we got back from tour, actually, so we were in Arkansas when COVID hit full force last March, and we're teaching a lot of workshops at middle schools for like string students and doing assemblies and stuff. And then we very quickly, like, we got news South by Southwest canceled. We got news. Like,
that's the moment I knew it was real.
Yeah.
When, for real.
I was like, holy shit, something is really happening here.
Our tour was headed out to South by. So we were like, well, no, what?
Yeah, I guess I just read it on Instagram. So it was probably a little bit more impactful for you. But yeah,
I think
that was
Michael
the moment
saw,
for me.
Michael, like, didn't you like have a link on your phone or something? We were like wrapping up a gig or something. Do you remember when you read it?
Yeah, because I think I got like a notification or something from some page I followed that was like, South by Southwest has officially announced they are canceling their 2020 festival. And I was like, guys.
Yeah, I think you were like wrapping up cables, and I was like, yeah, okay, I figured. Well, so then we like turned around and drove home. But Sav took a detour and went through Nashville, because we had 2 months prior, Sav and I moved all of our stuff down to Nashville. So she went down and picked up her cat, who's also named Nashville. but nice. She picked up Nashville. We all met up back in Northern Michigan, and we almost went to Portland because one of our producers we work with, Tucker Martin, has an amazing studio out there, and we had recorded a few songs for our full length like indie rock album called Vessel with Tucker, and we were like, let's go finish Vessel, but it was just at that time where we're like, we don't know what'll happen. Like, we might get stuck out in Portland. Like, we don't know right. if like states we were like, our state border's gonna be shut down. Like, all these things were running through our head, and then we kind of unpacked the trailer and realized, like, I mean, we've got all these amazing gear sponsorships, so we've got like a full mic package, and we've got all these instruments, and we, you know, pretty much carry everything on tour with us to put on a show. And so we were like, let's see if we can make a home studio. We'll start making demos for the unfinished songs, and we'll see where it goes from there. And I remember like sitting down at the computer once we decided to really go for it. Like, the first song we recorded, I was like recording Sav's vocals, and just the feeling of like being able to comp, like having that control and like picking the takes that you love and having the time to sit down, I just wanted to like cry. I was like, I have so much control and it feels so good. And then like a month later, I was like, I want to cry because there's 100 takes and I don't right. know which to choose. And like, I can't sing this anymore. So we definitely had the full pros and cons of home studio life.
Yeah, I had a similar experience because we actually were moving right at the beginning of this. So in like that first week of April, we moved from Florida to New York.
Oh,
and
wow.
Upstate, to be fair, not the city. And
oh, gotcha.
And I remember driving I remember a lot of confusion around like, do we just go? Like, do we go a week early? I don't know. Are we going to get stuck here? What do we do? And I remember we decided like, all right, we're just going to bolt, you know, let's just like throw our shit in the truck and go. And I remember driving up and seeing everybody, you know, so many states were stopping people at the border and the roads were like empty. And it just felt very apocalyptic. It was a super weird feeling.
Dude, one of the scariest moments for me was driving back. You know, like I said, I swung through Nashville first, and my mom was with me, and we were passing through Indianapolis, and she was like, well, let's just stop at a Meijer. We'll just grab some sandwich supplies, and, you know, that way we don't go in a restaurant or anything. Yeah. There's still a lot of space in the hallways, and we're passing this Meijer, and I look over, and the entire building is wrapped around with cars. There's an ambulance. There's three police cars. The entire parking lot is packed, and I was just like, we got to keep moving. Like, we got to go. Let's just get there. And so we drove like literally 14 hours straight, like stopped maybe for gas three times. I wore gloves and a mask. Yep. Like, it was just bonkers.
Yeah. Dude, especially in the beginning, we just had no clue what was going on. You know? Yeah. It was so scary.
Dude, I just found like, just since you, Sav, mentioned Meijer, I like met up with my family. And my parents picked up me and my sister from Kalamazoo. We drove back, and we stopped at a Meijer in like sort of out of Kalamazoo, and my mom just a few weeks ago pulled out the receipt, and she was like, this was the last time we went in a grocery store. And
oh, no way.
We looked at all the items on the list. It was a pretty small order, and like most of it was like Pop Tarts. We were like, we ordered like 6 boxes of Pop Tarts for our last stop in a grocery store. But it's interesting to look back.
Yeah. For anybody who's not from the Midwest originally, Meijer is like
it's regional.
I'm from Ohio, so I'm in the know. But Meijer is like a Walmart.
It's like a Midwestern Walmart or Target.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Meijer has this like, that reminds me, Meijer has this slogan. This just explains, I think Sav was the same way as a kid. Like, we were these young kids who are so overachievers. Like, my parents drove me by Meijer when I was young, and their slogan was, why pay more, with an exclamation point. And I wrote a handwritten letter to Meijer and said, hey, there should be a question mark, because why pay more is a question, not a statement. And they replied and sent me like like 50 ruler, like Meyer branded rulers for my classroom.
probably because you like the rules.
Yeah. Oh my. Yeah.
I feel like, Katie, between that story about writing a letter to Meyer and how you felt when you started recording your music independently gave me a real window into your personality.
What's funny is like Katie's actually one of the more passive people I know. So like that's a kind of like, that's dude, like I am, part of it, but not the whole picture.
Sav, you run with like a real type A group then.
Oh my God, we're all type A. It's
mm-hmm. We are like the most like perfectionist, flexible, stubborn, open people I know. It's, I don't know how all those contradictions live together, but we've learned to be both.
We like get mad about Mario Kart when like the other two aren't the very best. Like, here's the thing, like all of us worked together in Mario Kart to battle the computer generated enemies to make sure that all of us could secure first, second, and third place.
I totally focus understand toad. That. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we called it. We were like, focus on this guy. We're going to beat the crap out of this one computer enemy to make sure that the three of us end up on top.
Yeah, my brother-in-law, when him and I play together, like the first person who gets first in Mario Kart, like we try to make sure that that person like maintains first place throughout the next three races so that we can, you know, unlock other shit. But
yeah, you do them like the escort.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's so funny.
Oh my gosh. We did. Never mind. We don't have to talk about Mario.
No, I mean, I'm here for it. It's not a necessity that we talk about your new album. I mean, we can talk about regional grocery stores and Mario Kart all day. I'm into it.
We really could.
I did want to ask you, though, we talked a little bit about the technical side and how you guys maintain mutual respect and kind of the dynamics when you're recording. But from the songwriting side, there are so many personal, it seems like kind of personal touches on each song. And I imagine they come from very real places and real stories. So how do you balance? I think Night Train is the main song on this album that comes to mind for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it brought forward so many thoughts of my own life, my family, my grandparents, and that kind of thing. So how do you balance which personal takes make the cut on each song, you know, or on an album?
What's funny about that one, I think every single write on that record has a totally different process for how it became what it is. You know, sometimes like I would, like for Wildfire, I sent like a voice memo of like just the first verse and a little bit of the chorus to everybody. It was like, you know, what I thought was going to be placeholder lyrics, right? And the phrase waiting on a wildfire is something that my mom had said at the dinner table when we were talking about COVID. She's like, man, it was just like we were waiting on a wildfire. I'm like, oh my God, I'm writing that down. And so like that was one way that that came about. Like that's how that started. But with Night Train, it was totally different, where we got on the phone with Dar Williams, like I want to say like 4 or 5 times. And like the first 4 or 5 times we got on the phone, we were just talking about this train ride that she took across the United States, like right before the world shut down. And she was just talking about like the people she met and the places she saw. And we were kind of like, what Katie and I were doing the entire time was we were like kind of taking the pieces of what she said and fitting them into a rhyme scheme like the entire time. So that's how that song like really developed. And I think we have 4 or 5 different, it's like a Leonard Cohen song where there's like a ton of different verses that we tried that just, you know, some of them stayed, some of them are lost in the wind, but there was just so much that was said and done. And, you know, what's funny about that is that it was just nice to talk to somebody about like traveling, right? Because that's something that we've all done in that group. We've all traveled the United States. We've all seen a lot of different things and we've taken away kind of the same message that there's still some, there's good people out there. There's still hope to be had. And keep in mind, we kind of wrote this before even the election happened, like 2021 election. So there was a lot that was uncertain, but we were kind of trying to convey that like there's still work to be done, of course. But the one thing that you see out there when you travel is people kind of sharing the same experiences and, you know, having compassion for the sake of compassion. So that was a really inspiring write. I don't know if you want to talk more about that, Kate.
Yeah, no, it was... it was really good to have all those conversations with Dar, and lots of rewriting, lots of editing. I feel like what I've learned most is, like, for the first however many years, like, I probably started writing songs when I was like 13, and I was, you know, writing really angsty songs that I was too afraid to show anyone until I met Sav. And even from that point, I feel like I had an idea in my head about what made a song good. And what I've experienced through co-writing and listening to more music and talking with more songwriters is, like, all my preconceived notions have just been, like, blown out of the water. Like, I appreciate so much more songwriting, and I feel like a song can be super powerful if it has if it's broad enough to speak to a lot of people, if it has passionate, like, simple messaging, or I also love songs that have really specific personal details. Something like, you know, like in Night Train, where Dar was like talking about, even in the first verse, there's a line about, like, all my friends said it was faster to book a plane ticket to get home rather than take the train. But Dar was like telling us how this trip she took back from her last tour before COVID, she just wanted to get on a train to be around those, like, you know, like-minded people who wanted to take it slow and, like, see the countryside and kind of be alone with their thoughts and reflect, and kind of this culture of the stories you pick up on when you're taking it slow on a train. So I love those personal details too. I think there are so many elements that can make songs good. My mind has been totally transformed through this co-writing process. Like, I feel like I could, like Sav mentioned, there's 100 verses to Night Train that could have been included. This is just kind of cool to see how the finished product turned out, you know, what ended up keeping. And it was purely determined by, you know, who's in the quote unquote room. Like, a song couldn't have been written the same without, you know, any one of us.
Yeah, it's a beautifully written and performed song. I can't think of another song that makes me feel, like, instantly nostalgic than when I heard that one for the first time. And the way that you were talking about your friend who wanted to take it slow across the countryside reminded me of a quote, and I really wish I could remember who said it, but it was along the lines of, with when the highway system was first built, I guess, and he was saying that, like, with the implementation of this new highway system, it's possible to travel all across the United States and not see a thing. And I feel that way about flying. And when you drive, you do get some of it, but there is something very romantic about a train because of the way that it just cuts right through the countryside, like you said.
And I thought it was just, you liked our train really
cool shanty. Song. Oh, yeah. Well, one of the reasons it made me so nostalgic was that my grandpa was an engineer on the train. He was like,
oh my gosh.
Oh, whoa.
He started, like every Midwestern boy who grew up in the Depression, when he was like 14. And then he was on the railroad for like 40 years before he retired. But it just made me think of that kind of stuff. And it was just so well done. I just really appreciated that song. Man,
that's the coolest. I love that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So were there other stories that come to mind when you were thinking about putting together this album, or other personal anecdotes that made it into this EP?
Yeah, I'm kind of going through the track list in my head. I want to do a huge shout out to Tom Paxton, because he has been, like, such a joy, such an added joy to our lives. We met him because we're all on the same booking agency, and our booking agency, called Fleming, they have been doing weekly Zoom calls since the beginning of quarantine. And they were like, we'll just do this, you know, until the next couple months go by. And it's been a year now of just doing weekly Zoom calls and just talk. They'll bring in guests to talk about the industry, or we do this really cool thing where, like, once a month we host, like, a little, you know, interactive show where everybody plays songs that they've been writing. So we have met all of our roster mates as a result. And Tom Paxton is one of them. And so, you know, while we were doing one of these interactive shows, we played a song of ours that's coming out on the Vessel LP called City View. And he hit us up immediately after that. And he was like, hey, I want to write with you guys. Let's do a write every Monday. And so we've been doing co-writes with him literally every Monday since like August of last year. Yeah, so we have like 15 songs with him, 16. And it's been so inspirational. He always tells these crazy stories of like how he met Shel Silverstein and knew him really well. And like,
that's awesome.
He just told us he, because he sold Bob Dylan like one of Bob's first guitars, like which guitar is it? I can't remember off the top of my head, but the one that he's playing in like lots of his early photos and songs, like that was just Tom selling that. Tom said he owned it for like an hour and then he sold it to Bob Dylan.
Like, yeah, it's just, you know, talking to Tom and having those stories and getting to hear them in his perspective. And then on top of that, you know, he is 83 years old. So we're spanning a 60-year generational gap and still writing and creating together in a way that speaks to everybody. So that's really inspirational. And it's such an added beauty to our lives. And the song Anyway was one that we wrote with him. And that's kind of the darkest point on this EP, I think, surprisingly. You know, Tom is like a very jolly person. So it's funny that the darkest song of the EP is one that we wrote with him. But I think what we were trying to convey was like, the feeling of real loss and grief. And there were some days where, you know, everybody was going through it. Like everybody was struggling with either a mental illness or emotional illness. And, you know, waking up to another day was really hard, I think, during isolation. So we wanted to definitely touch on that because so much of the EP is just, you know, the cycle of grief and acceptance. And, you know, especially during this time. And that one doesn't have a verse at the end like Wildflower does, where it's like, you know, over time, the wildflowers find a way to bloom where only ashes were before, you know, it doesn't have that. Anyway, it's just like this very ambiguous song. It's like the whole refrain is it's just another sunrise anyway. And you can take that to be like, it's just another sunrise. I see them all the time. Or, you know, it's just another sunrise. It's going to be okay. It's just another day. It will pass. So there were days that were like both of those interpretations during this time. And, you know, you can take one way or another from it, but it really is up to you how you interpret the next day.
Yeah. Well, that's really well said, Sav. I think when you're talking about this in any way and all the things that you've said about it, in the sense that, like we kind of talked about in the beginning, that things are, you know, it seems like we're hurling towards this unavoidable dystopia. And last year, like, really exacerbated it. And you mentioned the isolation. And to me, it just felt like such a perfect storm of events that made so many of us feel that way. But then, kind of conversely, like what Katie mentioned with Night Train, is that when you are out there and you're meeting people, opposed to being insulated and on the computer and only getting this caricature of what people across the country are like, it's much different. They're like, oh shit, these people are actually really nice. And like most people I meet are really nice. But when we've got a pandemic and you're alone and you're sad, and then you're on Facebook, and if anybody saw The Social Dilemma, like everybody knows how dark that gets. And yeah, it just felt like such a perfect storm of all of those things that came together. And I like I said at the beginning, your album does a very good job of balancing the perception of what things were like and the reality of what things are like, and how those both kind of play off of each other.
Man, I appreciate that. It was very serendipitous, and we were really lucky to work with people who, you know, like, I know that mutual respect is sort of the token word right now in this podcast already, but it really is, like, even working with people who were, like, you know, much more experienced than us, we still were lucky enough to work with people who were really respectful, and, you know, we all told the same story together. That was really amazing. So
yeah. I do feel like having those connections and maintaining new connections through this seems to be something that helps not only with the creative process, but I don't know, remaining a human being. And it sounds like from what you guys did with the roster list that you're on and with the co-writing, that it ended up creating great music, but also potentially creating great relationships and saving grace, a life raft during this really weird time.
Yeah. Genuine relationships came out of this, which I find, really interesting. And great art came out of it too. So that, sometimes you have to go through fire to get that.
And this year just kind of like exacerbated collaboration throughout, I think, the entire music community.
Yeah.
Just because everybody needed, to work together to make, getting on board with the new, style of playing shows or live streaming. Like, a lot of people needed help, and it was a lot of the community just coming together and like helping each other up and making sure we all had access to, different outlets to, do what we needed to do to get through the year. And so I think that there's just, like Sav said, so many genuine relationships came out of it because, you really saw that side of people, like the everybody helping each other side of people. And, it was really really an interesting way to communicate with people and to form those relationships, especially since, everything was online. And I think when we all first started it, we weren't sure all how to navigate that online space in that way. But I think now everybody's kind of gotten in tune to, how to talk over the internet in a good way, to like communicate well in that way. So, but yeah, the whole collaboration of last year throughout the entire music industry was really a good chance for us to all talk and get to know each other better as well.
And I also, one more thing on that is that it gave everybody a sense of perspective that I think this generation is going to carry for a lifetime. I remember holding my great aunt's like World War II ration tickets and like feeling that sense of kind of like otherness. Like, that was a separate lifetime to me. I'll never really know what kind of experiences and how that's shaped her to be a person. And then this happened, and now I'm going to hold on to like my mask and like hold them out like 30 years from now and be like, yeah, that made me more careful with my relationships and my time.
That Pop-Tart receipt. I'm going to share that. That Meyer receipt. Yeah. Pull it out.
That rolled out toilet paper,
I was going to say, I got my first dose of the vaccine yesterday, and I got a sticker that says I got my COVID-19 vaccine. And my friend was like, oh, I'm going to put that immediately like on my water bottle. And I was like, I'm going to keep this forever.
Yeah.
Because that's one of those things that like I would want to pull out in 50 years and like remember that day of.
And it'll be such a cause for celebration when everything does come back. Like, I can't imagine how many tears are going to be shed when everybody like gets together for the first festival. Like, BlizzFest, a very popular festival up north, is already canceled for this year because they're trying to be as safe as possible. And I have so much respect for them because I know how hard that is. Mm-hmm. So when we do come back in 2022, cross fingers, hoping everything's good. I think it'll be so much more impactful than the past, even the amazing past couple of years. It will be just that much more appreciated and welcomed.
Definitely. And only, there's a really good expression that I'm sure I've said it on here before, but it's in terms of relationships is where I heard it. But it was like, even fire needs air. With all of these things, like these music festivals and all of these things that we really took for granted, being able to just be around your friends and your family and your grandparents, like now we've had a lot of air and that fire has dwindled quite a bit. So when we are able to reignite it, I do imagine it burns very bright.
That's such a really lovely way to put it. Maybe short songs. We should be doing the podcast about you.
I don't know about that. We'd run out of material pretty quick. I say one good thing like that per every four episodes. So I mean, people have got to be very selective with what they listen to. But I did want to ask you, nobody was more creative or prolific with what they were doing online, like you guys were. Like you said, you did all this creative stuff with your Patreon supporters, and you did so many live performances for charities and other organizations. Was there anything that you guys kind of took a gamble on? You're like, this is kind of off the wall that we're going to try to do in light of everything being virtual, that worked out really well? And is there anything that was like, oh, maybe that wasn't so great, we cannot repeat that going forward?
So like the entire trial run of live streaming. Right. You know, before the tutorial was written, it was how the tutorial got written that was a big jump of, you know, oh, let's try this Instagram live stream. Okay, let's try this Twitter live stream. Oh my god, that went horribly. Let's do something different.
Well, and when we first came off the road, we were doing live streams like every day. We had a little series called Daily Breathers, where we would like light a candle, play a song, talk about like a book or a podcast recommendation we had, and then like sign off. So it was only like 15 minutes, but like every time we'd do one, we'd like figure out a little bit more of like how everything's working and like just really getting that experience in by just doing it like day after day after day. And also like, you know, being able to talk to our community as well every day, you know, like we heard from a lot of people that they really enjoyed those, that it was like a good deep breath for them in the middle of the day that they could like come back to when things felt like a little bit overwhelming. So it was kind of like, you know, really trying to figure out the whole live streaming thing while also being able to like talk to our community as part of it.
Well, and the live streaming thing also led to like these crazy opportunities. Like we met Kim Ritchie because of it. Like I was talking to, you know, it got passed around to a lot of venues, like trying to go like onto a live streaming platform, like The Arc and Club Passim and the Bluebird Cafe. So like I was kind of developing these relationships with these venues, and Club Passim was like, hey, we've got this live stream coming up with Kim Ritchie. Can you talk to her about some recording techniques? And I was like, oh my God, she's my hero. You want me to talk to her? So, you know, stuff like that. And then also it got connected to the Recording Academy. And so I was talking to like a lot of creators through that too. Like I did a panel once with Adam Neely over the course of quarantine. And it's just really surreal, like how sometimes when you do take that risk, like it ends up paying off, even when you're just sitting in your house doing like not touring, like you thought that, you know, you think like when you tour all the time, you'll get all these opportunities. But sometimes just doing something as simple as like making a certain piece of art and then just sitting in your house and like watching it explode, like you never know what's going to take off, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I can tell just by the way that you three have been able to communicate on this podcast so well, like switching the balance between who speaks, and there have been almost no hiccups, which is wild to me. Huh. Because whenever we have more than two people on this show, like it's usually really tough to balance, but you guys did it flawlessly. And I think that speaks to the mutual respect. Got a key in my buzzword there. The mutual respect that you guys do have for each other, and you know the hours that you put in the creative process. You guys are putting out incredible work, and you're very articulate. And it's been really a pleasure speaking with you. I mean, this has been a lot of fun for me.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us on.
We need to talk again about Mario Kart in depth.
We gotta do a D&D session.
Well, yeah, next time I'm passing through the Midwest, if you guys are still in Traverse City, we'll just have to go ahead and do some trivia and some Mario Kart.
Yep.
And,
oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And maybe even read a book. Who knows?
100%. Wow, that sounds like a total party. It sounds off the hook.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's how we do it here at Setlist. So where can people find you guys, and when can they listen to this new album?
So you can find us at theaccidentalsmusic.com or Patreon.com/theaccidentals. Patreon.com/theaccidentals. We're also on Facebook and YouTube and Instagram, everything. And you can follow us on Spotify in particular. That's when you get notified every time we drop a new song. And that's going to be happening a lot this year because we have so many songs that need to go out. So definitely follow us on Spotify or Apple Music, wherever you get your music from. Come hang with us.
Yeah, and the full timeout EP. The timeout EP is going to drop May 7th. So we've got a few more singles coming We've got a few more singles coming out off of that EP before May 7th. And then we've got another full-length album coming out later in the year.
Right, right. I did want to ask you guys before I let you go. Everything you do seems to be very deliberate. And like we mentioned, there may be some type A personalities in this group. So how did the name The Accidentals come to be?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, we were certainly not trying to sound like a college a cappella band with that. We were trying to emphasize kind of the fact that we did meet very much by accident, but also, you know, accidentals in music theory are these notes that you can kind of see in the sheet music ahead of time, and it just looks like left field, right? Like, you have no idea how that's going to sound in the context of the piece, and sometimes you can kind of hear building up to that note change, but you really have no way of predicting what it's going to sound like, and then almost every time it works out, right? Like, you hear it and it makes sense, and it's usually just a big change in the rest of the piece, and I don't know, there's a metaphor there somewhere, but I think, you know, we defy expectations a lot of the time. So I think that's our whole mission statement. And typically it works out. So.
Oh, I'm so glad I asked that, because that was like really well said.
Oh, yeah. And
we're also I had never heard it described prone. That way.
Accident prone, yeah. Too. That's it. That's less words.
Yeah, we've had our fair share of crazy tour stories. I think it feels like another lifetime ago now that we've spent a year off the road after like 6 years of like over 200 shows every year for 6 years. So there's a million tour stories and like crazy stuff that happened. And yeah, I feel like we've still found ways to have crazy accidents, sometimes happy accidents in our home studio and live streaming space. Yeah, it's just an ongoing theme for us.
Well, I can definitely understand that. Well, thanks again for doing this, guys, and I can't wait for everybody to hear this new album. It's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing this.
All right, thanks for listening, and thanks to Katie, Michael, and Sav for joining the show. Their new album, Time Out Session 1, is available for stream and purchase everywhere right now. Head to their website, theaccidentalsmusic.com, to pick yourself a physical copy or to keep up to date with new music, tours, and all those kind of things. At the end of this episode, we will give you a little sneak peek at the album. We're going to play Might As Well Be Gold, so be sure to stick around. If you'd like to keep up with things going on at Setlist, you can head to our website, that's setlist.community. You're going to find all of our previous podcasts, our blog posts, and our merchandise there. And join our email list to really be in the know. Thanks again for tuning in, guys. And please enjoy Might As Well Be Gold by The Accidentals. Shining in the dust. Yeah, the house is full of memories. All the anniversaries of people coming and going. No, we don't have to hide them. We learn to live beside them. We learn to carry on. Look at what we have. We get diamonds out of broken glass. It's just like us. All that we can hold. Bits and pieces might as well be gold. Shining in the dust. Your sister's on the phone, and I know how the car. Find a thorn in any rose. No, it's not up to her to measure.
Look at what we have. We get diamonds out of broken glass. It's just like us, all that we can hold. Bits and pieces might as well be gold. Shining in the dust might as well be gold. Shining in the dust might as well be gold.